Tired of your sound taking up too much space in your house? Well, Soundbite, SOUNDBYTE, has a solution for you. Are you constantly trying to find more storage space for your clothing, Tupperware, and sound? At Soundbite, you can hear lots of little audio clips, instead of having big, large ones that require vacuum sealing or even buying a storage space. Save space this holiday season and go to Soundbite, the app. SOUNDBYTE. Okay, welcome to Hack Thought Podcast, a podcast about thoughts you don't think to think about. Every once in a while, we do what's called a rapid hack thought, which is just little thoughts that we have to get through.
I need a better car.
We haven't done it. Well, there you go. We haven't done this in full. Shoelaces. I've mentioned my hate of shoelaces over the years.
You a Velcro guy? You got all Velcro shoes?
I own a pair of shoes. They have shoelaces on them, but they're
oh, you hypocrite!
They're fake. I slip them in and out. They're not actually holding the tongue in.
Mm-hmm. I got those curly ones that you just pull them, and they look like pigtails.
Well, those don't work either. Those were an option for young kids.
I ran a marathon in them. What are you talking about?
You know, sometimes, Deepu, you just miss the whole fucking point of the show. Okay, those don't work either. Shoelaces. I mean, dress shoes don't have shoelaces. Most dress shoes don't have shoelaces. There's no need to draw to tie a huge amount of dress shoes.
You end up fucking barefoot on the dance floor at your fucking brother's wedding.
Again, wrong. There are dress shoes that don't have laces. There's a huge amount of dress shoes that do not use laces.
Yeah, there are. And then your feet are loose and you're uncomfortable and you can never socialize properly because you're thinking about how roomy your fucking toes are.
You got the wrong size shoe. So you put your shoes on and you, like an Olympic ice skater, tie them so tight so that in case any centrifugal force comes against you, your shoes don't fall off.
I'm strapped in. I can take 9 G's, baby.
You wouldn't get rid of shoelaces for anything other than athletic events?
I would either get – the only replacement for shoelaces to me are dipping my feet in concrete, in wet concrete, and forming new feet out of concrete.
I'm in favor of that. I'll say that. I wear a lot of shoes. I am seriously 100% in favor of hooves. Like the horseshoe that's attached to my foot. I am in favor of that. Yeah, I would be in favor of them being drilled in. I'm fine with that.
And again, we journey into the true nature of the restaurant saga. So, of course, this is thoughts you don't think to think about. And the restaurant saga is all about figuring out why restaurants are universally ununderstood. That's the center of most hack thoughts, by the way. If you've been listening to the show for a while, we've had a hard time explaining what we're really driving at. And I think with the restaurant saga, I'm starting to really understand what causes hack thoughts. And the reason we all have thoughts we don't think to think about, and or we think, why didn't they think to do that for me? Or we think, why didn't they do that? Or why doesn't someone know to do that? It all comes from the idea of something universally being ununderstood. For the most part, that's what it is. There's no consensus amongst people. You know, one of the big ones we maybe should do is boyfriend and girlfriend. That would be a great hack thought series to do. Maybe after this we'll do the romance saga, because people's like, oh, you're my boyfriend. What does that mean? You're my girlfriend. What does that mean? You should have a definition. There are no definitions. So the reason restaurants are so great is because it's universally unagreed upon. I love that as an idea. And no more of a clear version of how things should be than a really good podcaster. I dare say the internet's most underrated podcaster, Julian Titus. Not because I don't tell him every fucking time I talk to him that he's really good, but in his own mind. Julian told a really touching story several times on his podcast, Nerd Without Pants, about getting to run a branch of a local sort of expanding video game chain. The story was really moving, and despite him being, you know, great at talking about games as well, I felt as though it demonstrated customer service better than anything else, and that's where we need to start. We need to ignore food with the restaurant saga for the moment. Julian Titus.
I mean, I was eventually an assistant manager, mm-hmm. but due to kind of the grassroots nature of the store, I think all of us had kind of a personal stake in it. None of us ever felt like we're just employees, right? Like, we always felt very
invested. Oh, yeah, I meant financially. Invested. Like, it was...
No, never financially, no.
Because that's a big part of what I want to talk to you about, is, like, is exactly what you just said there. you were initially, underneath another manager, right? And then this other store came up. And then, but you were also moving up in that store before the other store came up, right? You were... at one point, like, equivalent to a shift manager, as far as I can understand it? Like, that you were in charge whenever you were there or something?
More or less. I mean, you know, it was... I definitely had responsibility. And even if I didn't have a title, I was definitely doing things directly with, like, the owner on special projects or, you know, like, just taking things upon myself. Like, very early on, I remembered telling my managers, like, hey, the back room is really messy. Can I just, like, stay overnight and clean it? And he was like, yeah, sure. And I was like, okay, cool. So I stayed up all night, like, you know, cleaning, throwing out crap and everything. And, like, it was the first time that I ever saw, like, the geriatric mall walkers. And they were, like, looking at me very oddly. They were like, what is that man doing there? And I'm like, what? You've never seen a man, like, you know, throwing away trash at 7 in the morning at the mall?
I've just gone through with somebody that that is... A, like, definitely both of our genie wishes is to spend a night in a store, like, the whole, like, when the place is closed, like, specifically a supermarket, and that I have a fantasy of living in an abandoned, like, rest stop on a highway. So then a store comes, then a store is in another place, like, far from where you are. There's, it's a chain, a small chain, what, like, 3 or 4 stores as far as I can tell?
Our stores?
Yeah.
So originally I was working, we had the one store, and then she decided to open one in San Antonio, and then she opened up a second one in San Antonio, which was probably the big mistake. And then what happened was the one, there was another one that was owned by her boyfriend, half her boyfriend and half... one of his former employees, and that employee who was had this half stake in the store, just one day, him and his whole crew just up and left, like right before holiday season, and so that's the one that she ended up taking that over for. I don't know how that happened, but she's like, "I'll take it," and then so that's the one where I ended up like being like in charge, and that's the one that's the one that I'm the most proud of, because that's the one where it was like a pigsty and just not organized well, and sales were crap, and it had a bad reputation for bad customer service. And I just turned all, well, not just me, but like me and my team turned all that shit around.
So let's start there. Let's start right there. I'll try and capture a lot of that in the intro, but okay. let's start right there. So you are Julian Titus.
That is me.
Let's ignore the entertainment credits, which are, I think, more than you want to say, you know, being a, it's actually harder to do what you've done with journalism. You should know that, Julian, that somebody asks you to write something for their site, as opposed to, you know, there's a million people that start their own site. So we'll ignore your accomplishments for the moment, even though I think,
sure.
Because I don't have enough time to yell at you about your humility, because it's, it's ridiculous.
Fair enough.
You should be able, I don't want to get the deep poo treatment. I'm trying to mail you some ego eventually, Julian. So, you are a video game enthusiast is the wrong word, because that sounds like somebody that paints model airplanes instead of, like, you know, throwing rocks at kids. You love video games.
I do, and I actually do like the term enthusiast, because I think hardcore is so, like, the term is so diluted now, because I that can mean so, like, so many different things. I think enthusiast is really, that hits the nail on the head, because I follow this stuff very closely. I'm very passionate about it. I've never stepped away from it. It is my primary hobby. I have a lot of hobbies, but this is always first and foremost in my heart.
And I guess the thing is, now when you think about it, like, the video game industry, as it's always stood, could be done by a vending machine in a lot of ways, like, theoretically. But I guess,
yes,
what are the reasons? Because what we want to do in the saga is focus on customer service and focus on the idea of that it's pretty much always done wrong and not always even done with well intentions. And like, there's a lot of excuses given that I don't really think are valid. So that's my big thing with starting with customer service. Why, in your opinion, I guess, talk as broadly or specifically as you want, can video games not be done by a vending machine?
Well, so, I mean, if we're talking about like just new video games, then they totally can be done by a vending machine. And I think, especially with digital distribution, that's becoming more and more the thing. But I think the hobby of playing video games is such that people want to be able to commiserate over them and get together and talk about them. And yeah, you've got the internet, you've got forums, you've got, you know, playing online with friends and stuff like that. You can listen to podcasts and pretend that, you know, you're in the conversation. That's, you know, there's always that funny meme where it's the guy sitting with the against the poster of people that are hanging out together, and it looks very pathetic, but that's kind of how you feel when you're listening to a podcast.
But we should say, before people listen to this, this job you had was not during the heyday of podcasts.
This is true, yeah. And the job that I had, like when I started in 1997, there were not a lot of places to buy video games. Yeah, there was Best Buy, and yeah, there was Walmart, but they didn't have very good selections, and they definitely weren't going to be carrying, you know, this obscure role-playing game that's published by Atlus on the PlayStation 2. Like, that's just not a thing that was going to be carried there. So our store, and I mean, there really wasn't anything like our store when I started in town. It was very much like a catered experience. You know, if you were looking for something, we could probably get it for you. And not only that, but we knew what you were talking about. We knew what you were looking for. And we were probably into it ourselves. So like, you know, if you were coming into the store and you're like, I really want the Japanese import of Bust a Move 2, which is Bust a Groove 2 in America, but it hadn't come out in America yet. We're like, yeah, we've got that because three of us already had ordered it for ourselves and we put a store copy out too.
So, you know, it's an era without the Comic-Con as it's today would not have really existed. The Comic-Con culture wouldn't have existed. You would have had crappy internet. You wouldn't really be able to use forums. There were no podcasts. This was even before G4 TV or even any of that mm-hmm. stuff. So yeah. Let's equate the experience to a specialty experience, which is what a lot of restaurants and what a lot of people try and sell me on. In that they're a specialty experience and that they're doing all these different things. So in your opinion, I guess we'll just state the question in a different way, but the same question. What were you doing for customers? Or rather, what was wrong with the bad customer service? You said that the store that you took over had bad customer service. I mean, for you at the time, what was bad customer service?
Oh, well, so, you know, obviously, like our big competition was like Electronics Boutique, and wouldn't have even been GameStop at the time. It still would have been Funko Land, and so you would go into those stores and not be greeted, you know, not really be acknowledged in any way. Or the reverse would happen. They would hound you as soon as you got in the door and like ask if you wanted to pre-order something, you know. And so it's like the two extremes, You know, the stores would not be very well organized. But really, I think specialty really hits the nail on the head, I think. And I always thought of our store as the video game, as a bar for video games, in the sense that there were a lot of times when we were very much like a bartender, not just like serving up the right game to people. And that was that's one of the things that I loved about doing that is like someone comes in looking for a game and they give me this very, you know, ephemeral definition of what they're looking for. And then I bring them like three different games that would fill those holes. And then they go home happy with one of those. Always loved that. But also just listening to people, you know, just like, hey, like, did you hear about so-and-so game coming out? Or did you hear about like the rumors on this system? It's like, yeah, man, I heard about that. That's, you know, that's wild. Like, let's talk about it. You know, like that was really cool. Or, you know, someone comes in and they're really they're really broken up about the death of Aeris on Final Fantasy VII. It's like, yeah, man, that was rough. Like, let's,
spoilers! You know. God, you have no consideration for the internet.
No consideration. The statute of limitations is up.
But I guess the other side is, too, is like, I'll tell you a thing I don't like about bartenders nowadays. I've been going to a lot of bars and trying to have good drinks. And now it just seems as though it does seem like the opposite like that with bartenders, where you're saying, people are coming in and they're saying to you, look, I like this, this, and that. What can you do for me? But instead, the bartender world is almost like what I would say is like the film festival equivalent of entertainment, where it's like, you know, it just is like the weirdest thing. And like, it isn't about my tastes at all. It isn't about what I like. It's like, here's our weird, newest, expensive thing.
Right.
And you're going to like it. And even for you to suggest that it's not the best thing is, you don't get it. Like you feel isolated.
Yeah, that's actually a big problem that I've noticed, especially with comic book stores, but also occasionally when I go into indie video game stores, you know, now 13 years removed from when I was in the retail game, you know, that kind of, you know, and it's a geek thing also. Like it's now that geek culture has ascended, it's definitely this, you know, looking down upon other people's tastes type of thing that all has, like, just really rubs me the wrong way in general. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that I try to fight against on Nerds Without Pants. Sometimes I don't succeed because I definitely, you know, I have opinions. I have strong opinions on some things, but I try not to lord those over other people. If you like a game that I think is trash, you know, I'm going to be like, I'm glad you like it. You know, that's usually what I tell people. Perfect example right now is Kingdom Hearts 3. You know, that's the big new hotness that came out. And I'm like, that is not a journey that I can take. But I am happy for you people that are super stoked for it.
Well, I guess that's the thing that I think is missing. I, for example, overheard someone at a store, and they were talking about how their like exactly what you're saying about you're either hounded or not hounded or whatever. You know, there's two sides to these things. You're either it's friendly, it's either ignoring and it's way too casual and they just talk to their friends, or it's like they're just talking to me to get a sale. And I understand business is a hard needle to thread. But like this woman was talking about her effect, the effect of talking to customers that it had on her. And of course, me and the people that were there were not saying this vocally, but we were like, she's the most like, it was a really chill cafe before that. And this woman is having this amped up experience of talking to people when it's like, you know, no, I want to be left alone. Like the enjoyment of this is like being left alone. And like, how do you even say that to that person? Everything that you're talking about, and the reason I wanted to talk to you about it, and I want you to get a little bit even philosophical on this, is every single thing you've said has been about creating an experience for somebody else. It's the hospitality industry. It's ultimately why I am a fan of ASMR, but I could never do it. Because in the end, I am not a person who wants to help people in that way. I want to entertain people, which is it's a sidetrack to hospitality. But wanting to help people really isn't something that everyone has. And so for you, what does it mean, or what did it mean when you were in that specifically at running your own Game Fellows, like creating that a good experience for a customer? Like, what do you think that is?
You know, one thing that I really strove to do when I had my own store that was kind of thrust upon me, and I won't lie, like when that store was thrust upon me, I was none too happy. It was way out of my way, and it was kind of a shit pile, and just I wasn't enjoying it at the beginning. And but once I started to get my crew together, and it took a while, but I ended up with like really blessed with six to seven really amazing dudes that just gelled together in a really wonderful way. And something that we clued in on, and this wasn't even like an intentional thing, it just sort of happened, and I don't think it would have happened without this specific group of people. We started to highly personalize the store and give it an attitude that was very much us. So even though there were other stores, you know, under the same management and with the same name and everything, they were not us. And we started doing things like running tournaments, and we started making funny little signs. Like, three of us were artists, and so we would make these quirky little signs to impart information in the store. One of the guys had this like character named Goog Bunny that was his creation, but that became kind of the de facto mascot of the store. So we put him on signs everywhere. Everything from letting you know that the game cases were empty to you should buy some Pocky to whatever. Like when we were ready to move, like Goog Bunny was on the moving sign along with his other creation, Fire Monkey, which was a monkey with his head on fire.
Obviously.
Yes, obviously. It was just that type of store. And like, we had like this nice little recommendation section. So every employee had their own shelf where they could put 3 to 4 games. And at the on the ends of those shelves, we each had a little placard with a caricature that I drew of each employee with their name, what type of games they like. And so that way you got to know each employee personally. And it made a huge difference because you would have customers come in specifically looking for Adrian or Blake or Jeff because they knew that, you know, Adrian was the Xbox Live guy. And, you know, Blake kind of just liked his fun, like, platform games. And Jeff was, like, your fighting game guy. And you knew who to talk to when, you know, when you were looking for a particular thing or just because you wanted to chit-chat. You really liked Jeff. So you would, you know, come to the store specifically to visit with Jeff. And then Jeff would sell you stuff because that's what his job was.
So I guess what I'm hearing from you is that there is a parallel, and I'm going to wax philosophical here and really sound, you know, journalisticy. There's a parallel between games themselves and the experience, and just in general with customer service. You think about games, for the most part, they're coming from Japan, and they're a million miles away, but you're able to have this experience with somebody who's, you know, not near you, and pick and choose what that experience is. It was not the Walmart greeter. You were not foisting upon customers this experience. You weren't saying, like, welcome. What was the name of the character?
Goog Bunny?
It wasn't like, welcome. Home Goog Bunny lives here. Have a Goog Bunny day. Hey, do you want, like, a Goog Bunny shirt? It was everything you described there was, okay, there's a placard. I can go over there and read about the guys here. And then there's ammo to make it more interactive. But it was not this thing of like you had to shop our way. It was a passive way to create a customer experience. And to the other side of it too is that you were running it, but there's a lot of faith going on here in it working out. I mean, the owner of the store had faith in you, and
right. You
had faith in these guys to get to do stuff and to put their characters up and things like that. At no point were you sort of like, and you would have, I'm sure, been held responsible for your bad decisions. But I guess that part of customer service is the part I'm trying to understand about because I've never really been in a position like this. Why does there seemingly be in places that are forcing the customer interactions, why then are they also having the least faith in their employees?
That's a good question, and I wish that I had the answer. I do have the answer. I mean, the answer is the numbers, right? Like, at some point, these corporate places are only about the numbers. You know, GameStop gets a lot of crap for the way that they do things, but by and large, it's not the employees that want to do that shit. It's from their corporate overlords, and they have these very strict numbers and quotas that they have to meet, and, you know, personal interactions with the customers be damned. Like, they need to make sure that they tell you that they've got batteries for sale and to pre-order, you know, Red Dead Redemption 2 or whatever, right? Like, and it doesn't even matter what you're asking for. Like, you could be asking for a used Wii game, which is 10 years old, but they're still going to encourage you to pre-order, like, the newest hotness for the PlayStation 4. And even though clearly this customer is not interested in that because that's what they would be looking for is PlayStation 4 games, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I feel for them, like, and I've had, you know, some very good interactions with GameStop employees where it's clear that they love the stuff, and they haven't been there long enough for it to grind them down too much. But I think that's really what it boils down to is that it's just a machine that grinds these people's enthusiasm down. And that's for the reason that I don't shop at places like that. You know, I tend to do most of my new game purchasing online these days. And then when I'm looking for used games, then I go to the mom and pop places because that's where I want to be served.
You know, maybe that's the thing I have to investigate, is because every once in a while, speaking of big brands, there will be like the 19 best McDonald's. You watch some crappy TV show, you know, we'll do like a profile on it. And there are people who, like, even though McDonald's has these guidelines, there are people who are like, you know what? Like, our McDonald's, we're going to serve sushi. And we're, you know, right. like, or we're not, we're going to have green benches. We don't want their things. We want to have, you know, wood chairs or whatever. And so you got to think that at a certain point, it's like an excuse, right? The employee says, which is like the reverse of faith. It's like the employee says, oh, I can't do it because my manager says to do it. And then the manager says, well, that's GameStop policy. But GameStop, in reality, is getting a lot of shit for no reason, because GameStop, I'm sure, has guidelines that you can't do. But I'm certain, right. too, that you could probably do a ton of stuff that they don't care about, as long as you're selling games. You know what I mean? I'd have a hard time believing these strict things that I know all these problems with all these stores, and people complain on and on and on about these things. But, I mean, at a certain point, they would either confirm or deny it, or maybe it's it's just a way to get employees to fall in line to their way of thinking. Be like, it's, you know, passing the buck.
Maybe. I mean, from what I know from, you know, when I was in retail, in the gaming retail space, and then talking to people who worked at like Electronics Boutique and stuff like that, and then just anecdotes that I've heard since, and also just, you know, I worked at a supermarket. That was my first job. And, you know, there's not a lot of wiggle room in things, like, even when it comes down to like organizing your store, right? Like, maybe the people at your store are really into retro gaming. Well, not that GameStop really. Let's go into the past when GameStop carried older stuff. Let's say that your clientele was really into that stuff, and so you, as the manager, may want to front load that into your store because that's what does the most sales. But from what I understand, you would not be able to do that because every GameStop has to be just so. Every display has to be where it's designated. Every game category has to be where they say it's going to be. And if you want to do something special, like a midnight opening for a big game release, or if you want to hold a tournament or something like that, you've got to run that up the chain and get that approved like months in advance. To the point where I don't think it's even really worth it for a store to try to do neat stuff like that. You know, where a thing like us, it's like, other than like opening at midnight because, you know, we were in the mall and had to abide by mall hours, you know, it's like I held a 250-person Smash Brothers tournament for the GameCube. It was so many people that I had to do the battles in heats because we were violating the fire code. but I didn't need to get approval for that from anybody. I just did that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess then it's like, that's what I need to find out when I ask these questions. It's like, it might be futile. It's like, maybe there is some corporate thing there. But at the same point, I don't think that if you do have those policies, there really is no difference between a vending machine and a company that has these strict guidelines.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you like the grocery store, by the way?
It was fine. I mean, you know, I was 16. It was my first job. I didn't hate it, but I was there for almost 2 years, and then I got to go to GameFellas, and then those were the best years of my life. So, you know, I was at GameFellas for 8 years, and it also it actually ruined all of work for me because I was too young to be having that much fun on a daily basis. And then realize that you're not but that most people by and large do not have fun at work.
Right.
Right. So like having belly laughs every day over something, is not something that most people get to enjoy at work. And I hope that everybody gets to have that at least once in their lives because, it's something special. It's, you know, I look back on those days and I have photos from those days and like posters and drawings that we did of the staff. Like I did the game Beautiful Joe for the GameCube. I did this big the whole staff done as Beautiful Joe superheroes, and we all had like themes. So like mine kind of looked like Optimus Prime because I liked Transformers. And then one of the guys had like an Xbox helmet because he loved the Xbox. And one of them looked like Mega Man, but it was in that beautiful Joe style. And I just displayed that in the store. Had nothing to do with like selling anything. Again, it was just like, hey, you know us, like here's a caricature of us that you might get a kick out of. And we're going to put it, you know, prominently up at the front of the store next to our recommendations. Right. You know, so I think about that and I just get a big old smile on my face. And I think I've been told that when I talk about Gamefellas on my podcast, that people can hear the enthusiasm in my voice. So, you know, I take that for what you will.
I think you genuinely were at the heart of customer service with it, that it was everything good that people say with like capitalism and things like that, that it was like, you know, people wanted something, you had it, you didn't have to be you weren't a jerk about it. It was in fact the opposite. When they wanted it, you were so much more happy to bring it to them. When they didn't like it, you were upset. You know,
definitely. Yeah.
I guess the other side of it, the negative, which is obviously my department. you know, if somebody came in one day and was like, hey, these signs are, I don't even know what someone could say about it, but these signs bother me. Let's say something practical. Let's say these signs get in the way. Like every time you guys put them up, they're like in the way of my getting the game. Like you have this one over here and I'm trying to get the games and I feel like I'm pulling it off every time I try and look at something. What would your response be to that? What would your response be to you having this fun and people being like, yeah, but it's not working for me?
I mean, I think it would depend on how many people would like would bring that to my attention. You know, if it was like one person who's like, man, this stuff is really lame. Like, you know, why are you doing this? I would be like, well, you know, like we're just having fun and people seem to enjoy it. You know, we're going to keep on keeping on. But if it was a lot of people bringing that to our attention, then yeah, I would have changed things around, moved some things or, you know, you can always like some of that stuff we could have put behind the counter where it was not even in people's reach, but it was still in their eye view. And I don't think that would have been a problem. Now, I think a bigger question would have been like, what if like mall management came in and said, you can't have hand-drawn signs in your store. Then there's a little bit of an like I'm a habitual rule follower, but there's a little part of me that pushes back on stuff that I think is bullshit. Mm-hmm. And I think in that situation, I would have tried to get away with anything that I could have, like just really stick it to the mall, so to speak. Right. Like,
well, I think you've hit on the nail on the head there where it's like, it is one versus many. Like, you know what my big thing is now is like people will be like, how are you enjoying your customer service? And it's like, I just always respond to them badly because if I were to say a negative thing, I've never seen you change any of the things I've written on these comments. So if you have enough people, if you have a chain and like 10,000 people complain and you serve 1 million people every year, you don't have to do it, even though it might be so unpleasant and nobody's complaining. But I mean, are people even... you know, two or three people might have affected you there, right?
Definitely, yeah. But, you know, but one thing that I really hate about modern customer service, I detest programmed employees. The ones who are required to say the same thing to every customer no matter what. I don't know if you have them where you're at, but, you know, Chick-fil-A is a big thing here in Texas. And every time that you go there and order food from them and you say, oh, thanks, you know, they always have to say my pleasure. And it's such a weird phrase because you don't really hear people say my pleasure today. And I'm like, I don't want to hear that because you're just being told to say that. You don't want to say that. Right. And it's those rehearsed like calls and responses that always bother me. And again, you know, the whole like idea of like jumping on a customer, my whole thing was like, hey, greet the customer when they come in, let them look around. If it looks like they're lost or, you know, if they've been browsing for a while, approach them, you know, to say, hey, is there anything I can help you with? It doesn't have to be a big thing, you know, like a lot. And what I found is like a lot of times customers would end up starting up things with you, right? Like they would appreciate that we weren't hounding them. And I just cannot stand that robotic customer service. And, you know, it's like even my current job where we're on the phones, like my manager gave me a, you know, a script for when I answer the phone. I'm like, okay, that's going right out the window. I'm just going to answer the phone how I've always answered the phone.
Right. Like what would happen? You lose your, I mean, it's now crazy where like now you call like some of these customer service places and they're like told to repeat stuff back to you. And it's like, do you think I'm an idiot? Like you're just saying what I just said. It's so odd. Oh, and the hounding. I don't know. I'm going to have to talk to more servers about it. I was on a very intimate dinner recently, and we were having a very good conversation. We couldn't talk for more than 3 minutes without somebody coming over and being like, how's it going? He's like, it's fine. We're talking about it. Complicated family issues.
It's a very fine line. Like, you definitely don't want to feel like you've been completely forgotten. But at the same time, if they're coming in to check on you every 5 minutes, like, there's no need for that. Like, and I mean, I was in culinary arts when I was in high school, and part of that was serving food. And I remember one of the things that my teacher told us was when you're in the service industry, when you're serving food and you're on the sidelines, you look for visual cues. You don't approach someone cold. You, like, if you see someone starting to look around, you know that they're needing service. So then you go to them, you know, you don't just like, unless you see very clearly that, like, oh, their glass is empty, right? But if it's a thing like they're just talking, you just let them talk, you know? And then if they start to motion or make gestures that, you know, say to you that they need help, then you go help them. And I kind of always took that approach to my customer service in retail was, you know, if it looked like they needed help, then I would come to them. But, you know, I wasn't going to inundate them with like, oh, this is our sale right now. We're doing buy one, get one free and blah, blah, blah. It's like, you know, that's for later. Or that's if they bring up one game and it's like, oh, well, if you pick another one, then you get a free one, you know. Mm-hmm. So
your analogy of Chick-fil-A and your proximity to Texas has made me think of cattle herders, where the good cattle herder need not constantly be riding up against the cows and like having like their dogs bark at them, right? They're just kind of watching. They're monitoring the herd. And if something goes wrong, they'll notice because they're watching. I don't feel like I'm being monitored or looked after. I feel like I'm either being doted upon or I'm being ignored. I feel like there's no in between. There is no friendly rancher who's has a big hat and a leather coat that looks like it's as comfy as hugging a cow itself, and he's soft and gentle, and he's just watching out for all us little cattle, just trying to get us to the slaughterhouse, which is not great, but he's looking out for us until we get there, and he's like, you know, monitoring us and caring for us. I don't feel that way. I feel as though they're kind of like, you know, a little bit, the word I've been using as part of my theory is servant and slave-like. That people, either they're not watching you or they come over and they're like, hello, master, how can I serve you? What do you need? Would you want to whip me? Like, it's so odd. I think we should close. If you have any closing thoughts on customer service and things like that, I think we've done well. Otherwise, my weird cow analogy is a good place to stop. But really, I'm talking to you. So I can get your opinions on that, because I do think if people don't listen to the show, they should go hear you like talk about game. I mean, I almost think you should, like, in episodes where you talk about Game Fellas, put like it in the episode name, because it's so you do sound proud. You sound proud in a way that I think most people in their lives never talk about a job like that. They go, you know, cradle to grave. They never have that experience. And it's an experience where in today's entrepreneur world, you know, I think people would be like, well, you didn't have a stake in it. It wasn't your own thing. You didn't invent the video games. But I was like, no, but he cared. He was a good employee. That's the point of it, is he didn't need to own the place. Someone put him in charge and he did a good job. Like, that's what he's proud of.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think it's also kind of what I've done with the podcast too, is trying to really make it personal and let people, because, you know, some podcasts, it's very much about like the subject matter and you don't really get to know the host very well, right?
What are you saying? I've never even barely revealed whether or not I'm alive or dead or 100 years old on the show, Julian. What are you trying to say? Are you trying to say that I'm pretty uncomfortable even talking about what type of socks I wear?
I'm saying that's one approach.
Yeah, that's what you're saying.
You know, but on our show, I lead the charge on this, and then the rest of the guys kind of will do what they want to do. But I've definitely tried to say, like, hey, look, like, when I'm dealing with some personal shit or something really hit me in a real emotional way, I'm going to tell you, because I think it's pertinent to the conversation. And I hope that it actually makes you feel more attached to the show and makes you feel more invested in the people on it. And that's kind of how I felt about our store, is that the more that you got to know each and every one of the employees, the more you liked coming to that store. So, you know, and I think the fact that we used to have people that would come out and literally hang out all day long, every day, was kind of a testament to that.
That's a better place to stop it than my weird slaughterhouse analogy.